I'm Miriam Neff with Widow Connection New Beginnings and this program Starting Over Financially. I've been a counselor for 26 years, have written some books, and done a little bit of living.
I'm Valerie Neff Hogan. I'm an attorney and a certified financial planner, and I've counseled with couples and singles regarding budget and benevolence issues over the past 20 years in churches.
Valerie, I think today people listening, there are many that need help getting on track because a lot of things change in life that are unexpected or unwanted or just downright really sad. And typically, while we're dealing with emotions on that, our finances are impacted, and we want to address that because we realize this is a reality in our world today.
And if something has happened to you in your life currently or recently where unexpected, unwanted change has come about, you've become a widow, you've recently become divorced, a spouse has been incarcerated, a job loss, a medical problem, getting on your feet financially can be difficult.
We know that you have to take steps to address debt, to try to start your budget. And a lot of information like that, we have that on our website at widowconnection.com. But what we want to do today is talk about the big picture, because even though you may be focusing on the crisis at the time, if you don't kind of look at what's important to you, you can make some unwise decisions that have you going in a direction you say later on, why did I do that? So we just want to look at some of those things.
So first, you're budgeting, you're paying bills, you're getting debt free, but then eventually you'll be addressing a surplus. And that's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today.
You may think that's not going to happen, but just trust us and listen. When you get things in done, when you get your house in order, God blesses and you begin to have some things that you can decide, what am I going to do with this? A big question we'd like you to think about now is, what matters to you? What are the things that you really feel like, wow, that's something important? If I were to look back and say, what would people remember me for, or what's my legacy, or what motivates me to get my budget in order and save for something important, what is that?
If you're going to rebuild, you might as well do it on purpose. You might want to think about these things that really matter to you. One of the greatest motivators when you're having to get going, especially through a crisis, because you do need to get going on the financial matters so they don't present a second crisis to you. So after you're working on those, you're going to find, I'm making some traction here. So with that traction, what are your long-term goals? Some long-term goals tend to be travel, family, legacy, philanthropy, with great organizations that you love, with your local church, even adventure or service or just keeping up your health. So these are some things that people will focus on once they kind of get moving with a purpose and rebuilding. And the question is, does the way you're handling your finances reflect those values?
So that you can move in that direction. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is just a truth for everybody is that if you want to move in that direction, there's a very plain principle. Pay God and yourself first. So in other words, you give money for a worthy cause related to God, but then you put aside money for yourself a little bit. And one of the verses that I love on this, it's Proverbs 13:11. Wealth hastily gotten will dwindle, but those who gather little by little will increase. And you may say, well, that's really going to be me because it's going to be little by little. But that verse, Proverbs 13:11, says, you will increase, and little by little is okay.
And we like to say, give to God, give to yourself, pay bills. And some organizations will recommend even percentages. Like I've heard 10-10-80, I've heard 10-15-75, and various different makeups of that. But the point is, give to God, do your tithing, your giving, set aside some for savings, emergency savings, retirement, whatever that would look like to pay yourself, and then make sure that you've got plenty left over and that you're living within the means that you can give to God and save, and your bills will fit in the rest there.
So we want to talk about what to do with that money that begins to build a surplus. And there are different options, there are different places that this can go. We won't go into great detail on these, but basically it can go into bank. Well, let's see, shoebox first, right? But we're not recommending that.
Right.
It can go to stocks or equities, it can go to bonds, mutual funds, these are great things for you to begin to learn about. And I can say you can start from the beginning. If I did, you can. But there are places that you decide that you want to put that little money that you have so that it doesn't shrink or go away.
And many of those are very conservative investments, so they may not be subjected to the high highs and the low lows, so they may not make much interest on the high end, but they may not lose much when the markets are down or that type of thing. Other types are also CDs and even real estate and other kinds of investments. One of the things that are not only conventional wisdom, but it goes all the way back to Ecclesiastes, is talking about diversification. The verse in Ecclesiastes 11:2 talks about investing in eight things because you don't know what kind of disasters or what may happen. And we see examples of that all the time. A couple years ago, people who were heavily invested in real estate, if those were the only eggs in their basket, they really took a hard hit. Same can be said other times of oil. Same can be said other times of tech stocks. Even some years, bonds aren't doing well. So I think it is wise, it's not only conventional wisdom, but even biblical wisdom, that people diversify, because when one area is doing well and the other might not be, you still kind of have the steady, slow build up of eventually wealth, or at least of some savings.
One of the things that's really exciting about this is when you begin to put that money aside for something that you really value, there will be nobody that pays attention to that and takes care of it and watches it like you. And it is important to find and maybe talk to a financial advisor or at least someone wise in this way, but you never just leave that totally in someone else's hands, because God has given it to you. You're the steward of that. So you want to watch that and make decisions. Now, we have a few suggestions for picking someone to maybe help you with those decisions.
One thing that's wise to do is definitely do your homework, research, pick at least maybe three to interview and look at. I wouldn't look to just one. You want to compare. You want to look at their reputation. You can look online. You can look at organizations such as where they get their certification through. There are a couple different ways to get certified as a financial planner. You can also check their reputation. A good advisor will be happy to give references and be happy to have you check them. They've spent probably the better part of their working lifetime building up those good references, and they'll be proud to give them, and you know, won't be embarrassed or shy about that at all.
And then you call them. Don't just take the list. Make sure you contact them. One of the things that you'll need to know is that there are different ways these people are remunerated. They don't do this for free, and it may be a percentage every year of that money or whatever it is that you have. They may have a percentage of that every year that they take, or fee-based, depending on what activities you need from them, you know, once a year, once every 2 years, twice a year. So those are two different ways, and we would not recommend one or the other. Just say, this is typical. It's not going to be free.
And you want to understand, are you sitting down and considering, I will give you this kind of advice, and it will cost you this, that's fee-based. Is it a percentage of your overall portfolio that will just be charged every year? Or is it every time I move stocks, bonds, and investments around that a fee comes from that? And you really want to know that and keep your eyes on that. You want to make sure that somebody has your best interest at heart, and you just want to be aware of that.
There are different service packages, and someone may say, well, here's our package. This is all that you get. And you may look at the package and say, oh, I don't need that, and I don't need that. So you might want somebody else that really meets specifically your needs.
And you want to be careful, especially if you're considering a friend, a relative. You just want to watch for affinity fraud, which is unfortunately occurring with some regularity now. And so, again, does this person have your best interest at heart? Are they self-seeking or self-serving, or are they really serving you? Now, a professional is not doing it for charity, so they do need to make money. But the question is it all out front, and do they have incentive to work hard for you?
We say many times, you direct where you want your money to go. If you don't, it may take you places you don't want to go.
Right.
It may be invested in something that's not in your best interest.
And you want to tell your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And part of that is understanding your investments. So try to invest in things that you understand and just keep an eye on it there.
And know that life is unpredictable. even though we're talking to you and you've perhaps gone through this big change or something that you didn't predict, maybe it's a job loss, it may be that's the only blip on your life screen, maybe not. So the lessons you learn in going through this now, you may be practicing those lessons again down the line.
Another thing you want to keep in mind when you are starting to rebuild on purpose and you are starting to manage your finances with purpose and do some planning is think about estate or will planning. This is an area a lot of people don't like to think about, but it sure is important. The Bible definitely tells us in 1 Timothy about taking care of our family, and this is a major way that that gets done. When you have resources that you have built up, once you have savings, once you have a surplus or investments, when you're going home to be with the Lord and there's something left over here on earth, not necessarily sure you want to donate that to your state or have a judge say where it's going to go. And the way that you avoid that is by having a will or a trust. Again, this is something people don't really like to think about. If your crisis has been you just became a widow, then you've gone through this either the right way or a really difficult way. So what would you have to say about that, Mom?
Well, Valerie, if I can just be a little more bold, not that you're not bold, but I can say, are there people you love? Then have a will. Because it is an unloving act in our nation, in our time, to not have a will. Because that's saying, I'm just going to ignore that. That's not a loving way that you address people in your life that you care about.
And provide for the future. There are a couple biblical exceptions, but aside from those, you know, life is 100% fatal at some time. Now, we have the hope of heaven, which is excellent, but we exit this life more or less one way, again, with a couple biblical exceptions. But having a will or a trust is just a kindness you do for your family and for those you love and for possibly organizations that you've loved and been a part of your whole life, like your church and other wonderful organizations.
So, Valerie, with your attorney hat, I want to ask you, if you have no will, and I know people are in many different states listening, so we're not going to give specific state advice, but just in general, if you have no will, what happens?
Here are some of the things that can happen if you have no will. It's not 100% guarantee that your estate will go to probate, but with fairly certain that a judge will be deciding what happens with your assets, with your home, with your investments. And if you have minor children, they're going to decide who the guardians will be. So you really don't want to go that way. A great way to at least begin thinking about this is to get a will and then decide, do we need a trust? And if you have a little bit more assets, a trust may be a really wise thing. And I'll just give you some details about what they can do. A will likely will go before a judge, but it will say, this is where I want my assets to go. There could be power of attorney for health. It says, these are the decisions I want to make with my body and health when it comes to the end of my life. There would be decisions, power of attorney over property, so that even if you're incapacitated, that your relatives can, for example, pay the electric bill on your house or pay the mortgage while they're figuring it out. Now, probate can take thousands of dollars and it can take 6 months plus. Some people decide, I've got some assets here, I'm willing to put some extra money into having a trust made, and that would then bypass probate and bypass the court system, so your assets would go directly to your heirs or the organizations that you've left assets and money to. So generally, when you pass away and you do not have a will, the state will step in and take control of your resources that are left over. These would be assets like your home, your savings accounts, your retirement accounts, unless the retirement account has a named beneficiary, unless any of these accounts have named beneficiaries to them. But things that don't, if there is no will, the state will take control of that. They will hold it and publish that you've passed away and wait for creditors to come forward. They will pay attorneys in this process. So they will be allocating resources out of your estate. It will cost likely several thousand dollars, and it will also take a fair amount of time to get this processed before anything would come to your heirs. Most states would have that it would come to the spouse getting about half and the children getting about half, and so the judge would just decide. and, you know, apply that state's rule. But it really doesn't go to your decision then as to how you want to allocate the things that you have acquired over your lifetime. And there's no provision in there for church or charities or anything like that. So I would highly recommend at least having a will. And if you've got a substantial or even, I would say, a medium amount of resources, you want to seriously look at having a trust.
So, Valerie, my question is, do states then have a formula for how it's divided, like wife or spouse and children, and you don't get to pick? The state decides that?
Generally, yes. And the whole point we want to make with this is, do you want someone you do not know and you're someone who is representing the state you live in to make decisions with everything you've worked hard to acquire over your life? I would assert that that is not good stewardship. You are just leaving it in somebody else's hands, and you don't know who that person will be. You don't have any idea where their heart is, where their intentions are. And so that is highly likely not to line up with your value system.
So can you see the wisdom of this? This is wise because you are actually preventing, or at least lessening the heartache, lessening the trauma, lessening the hard time for someone else in a time that could be very troubling for them. So it's just very wise, and it's biblical. Now, besides the things that we have mentioned, you can give during your lifetime and enjoy seeing people use what you've given in ways that matter to them, and you can have the joy of that. Talk a little bit about what you can give, Val, in your yearly even.
Right now, you can give approximately $14,000 to a relative without incurring tax consequences from that. And so some people will say, hey, I want to do my giving while I'm living so I'm knowing where it's going. That may have been something either Larry Burkett or someone from Crown once said. I heard that somewhere in those materials, and I like that a lot. That really gives a sense of knowing, if I give some money here, how is that person stewarding it, and is it wise? You can see a little bit of what that might look like if you did leave them things in your estate. So that's one good thing. You can also bypass a lot of tax consequences if you give donations charitably now. Some people do wait and name charities or their church in their will or in their trust, but there's a lot of tax advantage things that people can do during their lifetime as well.
Hopefully, too, as you begin to hear what we're saying, you'll realize, wow, I kind of want to keep an eye on this. And you might even look back and say, I kind of wish I had looked at this before. But you know what? We're saying no regrets. The past is the past. You can learn from that. But what is likely to happen in your life is there may be changes in the future. There may be changes in terms of marriage, births, divorce, sadly, there may be other changes, and you'll need to say then, well, okay, I did this before. I'm going to revisit this. I'm just saying, God, it's all yours, and I really want it to be honoring you in whatever way that might be. And to the best of my knowledge and wisdom and looking at your word, Lord, this is what I want to do.
Most people, when you talk with them about what's most important in their life, will say, God is most important in my life. My family is most important in my life. And those are two things that you can honor by paying attention to your financial decisions and making financial decisions on purpose, planning when it comes to investing, and planning what's going to happen with the surplus at the end of your life.
One of the things that I encourage folks to do, too, is just to think about the values you've seen in others and the values you respect and what you want to mirror in your own life. And one of the things that we've learned a little bit about in our family is that it's important to talk about things. And I say this because I know it's hard. And I know some families don't want to do this and think, well, you know, we'll just avoid it and that'll be better. But having talks about what's important and things that matter to you. And then, like Valerie has said, look back, look at your checkbook and what you've been doing. It kind of tells a whole lot about what's important. This thing that you've gone through, whether it's losing your job or becoming a widow or divorce or whatever, this is something that is not a surprise to God. It might be a surprise to you. Maybe you saw something coming. Maybe you didn't. But remember, God is in the details of all that and cares very much about you through this process of making these decisions. job loss is an opportunity to make a change. And I know that might be hard to hear because you think I lost my job and this isn't going to work and whatever. But sometimes we're in jobs where we're not necessarily happy. We might not be as productive as we could be someplace else. And actually, that big crisis of losing the job is a time for reflection, to reevaluate what your skills are, to say, what is it that I want to do where I can be paid and I need a paycheck? It may be something entrepreneurial. Again, it was perhaps a surprise, but looking back and being focused on the circumstances and thinking, what if, should I have done this or that? That isn't going to solve the fact that you don't have a job. But looking to the future and asking God's direction, as you say, okay, what's next? That is an opportunity for something good.
In order to follow up on more of these things, you can go to widowconnection.com and look at the Starting Over Financially resources listed on the page. There's lots of great resources where you can go out and look into budgeting and investing and just doing estate planning and just start to kind of get a grip on the direction you should be heading and the planning you should do. But I would say go for it. Do your homework. It won't all come together at once, but start moving step by step. You know, have a big goal and break it down into small steps. And I think it feels good and builds confidence to just start taking steps in the right direction.
One of the things that people might be saying, well, I hear you and I think those are all great ideas. I'm in a marriage where we might think differently on that. And in fact, I'm sure we think differently on some of those things. I have this kind of thing that matters to me. My spouse has this kind of thing that matters to me. And one of the suggestions that Val and I heard recently is that one of the things spouses can do in that situation is at least pray together. And if prayer is hard, because sometimes husbands pray differently than wives, oh my, are we surprised by that? No, men and women have differences. But one person suggested just hold hands and pray silently to start with, so that you begin to just unify before God that you want to do something that honors Him.
I would agree with that. And I think taking those things before the Lord, He will bless the process. And, you know, another good saying is if the two of you are exactly the same, one of you is unnecessary. So appreciate the differences. And maybe you can make some headways on both of those value systems and say, I really like this and you really like this over here. And if we're diligently budgeting and diligently investing, we might be able to make a little bit of headway on both of those items.
In fact, Valerie, in divorce statistics, differences on finances are often rated near the top. So can you imagine what a difference it would make in those marriages if they could not judge each other, but rather work together? Because when you're unified on your budget, that's just an incredible bond. I remember when Bob and I got really together on our budget stuff, we had fun at the end of the month reconciling what we had spent that month. So it's a big deal in a marriage to come together on that.
If you'd like more information on getting started and heading down this road, I would just check out the resources on widowconnection.com under Starting Over Financially. A lot of good material there, and we would just encourage you that you can do this. There are a lot of great resources on the website. There are many good resources and much wise counsel out there that you can get to start moving in the right direction and moving your finances, your investing, and your estate planning in the right direction.
I can just tell you, God cares about you. He cares about every detail. He's not surprised by any of this. So He is with you on this, and you can do it.